Hey, Anpan, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
How are you?
Good. I was actually going to wait to start, but I guess you're starting it.
Oh, yeah, sorry, man. Well,
That's
I'm
all
just trying to prevent you from killing me. You're as you keep texting me and you're like, "Fuck yeah." I'm like, "Keep the car on the road, keep the car on the
right.
road." So, nice try. I know you're trying to get a monopoly on the AST tweeter in chief, but I'm still in the game, dude.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm sure you saw. I sent you a message that Deutsche Bank raised a price
Yeah,
target 64.
it's awesome. And there's just going to be so much more to come on this. Like,
Yeah.
it's really playing out how we had thought. So, how do you want to go about it? Do you want to, I mean, I guess the idea here is we're just going to chat like you and I always do, is
Yeah.
we're just going to have people listen to us and see that the emperor wears no clothes.
So I did write up some notes and then try to create some structure around this. So yeah, just we'll just have a conversation, and then I kind of broke it down into four themes, and so we'll cover each one of those. Like I'll just discuss some of the things that are in that theme, and then we can discuss it. But I guess before we start, I wanted to start it off by just doing some housekeeping, because there are a few items that kind of don't fit neatly in these four themes, but they're kind of interesting. And yeah, thanks everyone for joining. My God, what a whirlwind few weeks it's been, although the market has been absolute shit. I think, as we all know, for people who follow this game very closely, we are hitting like escape velocity, like a true inflection point. And I think after we have tonight's discussion and kind of where we go from here, I think it'll become more clear. And I know everyone's like, you always say that the market doesn't comprehend this. It
No,
doesn't understand. No,
this
this
time
time
for
it's
real.
different. But
Yeah.
in reality, though, this time is different. But
It
yeah,
is.
I guess I just wanted to say to start this off that so there's four key themes that I wanted to talk about. One is, financial slash funding. The second theme is accelerated execution or accelerating execution. Third is strategic, and then final one is regulatory. But before I kick this off, I guess we can just talk about this. I don't know how much of the call that you heard, but we
Yeah,
did.
I've listened to it twice now, which
Yeah.
I'll probably read it. I like to absorb it in every
Yeah.
possible way, but
Yeah. So I think a key thing that really jumped out on this call for me before we start into all this stuff is just the complete and absolute change in tone and delivery of the message. And so in this call, before I would say the management team would be optimistic, but in a guarded manner, and they would not be very, they would be somewhat cagey and non-committal about things, because obviously there were a lot of uncertainties in the prior, call it what, 4 years.
Well, and they're also the most Reg FD compliant company I've
That's
ever met.
true.
Like these guys are, it's for as much as people always are kind of complaining about them,
Yeah.
these are the most careful SEC guys I think I've seen. Like you have to pull it out of their teeth because
That's
they,
true.
they only would tweet out things like after the close on Friday because they didn't want to influence the stock price. For as much as people always think that this is like a pump stock, it's more conservative than like IBM.
Yeah, that's true. And I agree with you. I think legally they followed the letter and the spirit of the law. Actually, they probably overdid
To the
it.
extreme.
Yeah, just probably the people's frustrations too. But but as I said before, I think they were also a bit cagey and non-committal, because there was just there was a lot of uncertainty around regulatory, production, and funding, to be quite candid. However, today, these guys came out guns blazing. They committed to things. They are super confident. And as we discussed, like, it's clear they have visibility into
Yeah.
revenues and what can support the business. All the different plans are falling into place. They foresee, whether it's government, commercial, military, like basically like revenue is knocking down the door, and now they have money and they need to go execute. And so that, I think, was a huge change in tone today. I don't know. I mean, what's your thought there?
Yeah, I think so too. Well, to me, what's interesting, very few people will be able to pick up on subtle changes in companies unless you've really, first of all, unless you're on the spectrum and like tie your entire life to this stock. But when I when I look back, and I guess I have a lot of kind of more recent career experiences over the past 10 years that have, I think, helped me evolve from like your typical hedge fund guy. To me, where it really started is in June of last year, mm-hmm. when they promoted Scott to president, but importantly, a name you still don't really hear about, Sean Gupta. And so to me, I have a lot of humility to this now, and I'll say what this is, I'll define it, is really org chart changes. It's something that as a guy who now really only focuses on private companies where you don't have fully baked org charts and you're actually having to change things a lot with young companies and be like, well, we got to like fire this and like put responsibility under this bucket. Until you actually do that and do the personnel management yourself, which I had previously never done, I just don't think that many people would really come to appreciate it. And so then going back to what happened last June, when you had the org reshuffle, and you got rid of Sean Wallace, you brought in Andy Johnson, but most importantly, you created a new COO role for Sean, who used to be an accountant. That's when it clicked for me that I knew they had sort of tamed the greasy pig of scale aerospace production. Mm-hmm. And then what have you seen over the past 9 months, really culminating today? You have a company that previously was totally run over by the construction of BW3 and frankly by Block One. And now they're saying, we have really high visibility on the first 40. And by the way, I mean, you got to read the press releases tightly to really appreciate what's going on. You would never have exercised the option on the 60 launch, on the 60 satellite launch. You would have never done that. When you exercise an option, you're obliged. And a company and a board is never going to let you just start to play willy-nilly with like $70 million launch tickets. And so this means that the operational shakedown is really far advanced. And this, as you pointed out, is, pun intended, the rocket fuel for this stock, because we all invested prematurely as an R&D experiment and kind of got ahead of ourselves, to put it lightly. Yep. But now that this is in execution mode, that's what the market's ultimately going to care about. That's the path to $100 stock in the near term. And the fact that they're saying like, we got the 40 kind of locked and we're exercising the option on the 60, and then being able to have guidance, that's another thing where I'm very humble to, is great companies have enough visibility to provide guidance. And now they gave shadow guidance with the break even at 25 satellites. Yeah. And he doubled down on it too. I mean, Andy was like, well, hold on, just to be clear, this is exactly what we're saying.
Yeah. They said, which we'll talk a bit more about later, but yeah, we're going to be cash flow positive in terms of operating expenses. However, that said, that doesn't include CapEx, which clearly
CapEx.
They're going to have to buy launches, buy materials to build the satellites, all that stuff, which makes sense.
That's okay.
Yeah.
There's discretionary cash flow and then there's non-discretionary cash flow. And once you cover your SG&A nut, this is a completely different animal from just reality, but from institutional investors' standpoint, at that point, the plug ends up being quite easy. And
yeah,
I'll pause before I go off into another tangent. But the DB analyst like hit on a really crucial point.
I was gonna talk about that too, where are you gonna survive financially? To are you contemplating bringing in more funds to basically go attack more opportunity? Right.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Well, think about the game change here. It was this game of like, can you corner the stupid little animal and kill it? That's what shorts were playing of like, can we corner these guys and pin them against a financing wall?
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, you've seen this before sometimes where it's, you know, capital raises viewed as a positive arbitrage.
Totally.
And very quickly people go, wait, hold on. So they, you know, the analysts haven't really figured out yet is what the payback on these satellites is, but they will. Once people figure out that the payback is, you know, 6 months, whatever my math says, and it's probably better than that, then all of a sudden, every time they raise $500 million, the stock is going to gap up because the MPV got pulled forward in a big way. And then you have a real capital market cannonball, another trademark of mine.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And that's what the DB guy pointed out. And he's right. The more with access to capital, you pull forward opportunity, but you expand the opportunity, your TAM goes up, this is where you have like a classic secular growth stock that can go bonkers with multiple expansion. That's what I always was playing for. It was a long time coming, but that's where we start to have some like real super duper wealth creation among space mob. And I'm hopeful that that's the story over the next 12 months, really 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think today's call was a seminal moment because Kevin Mack pointed this out. It's also Tut, you, I mean, you know, several people, that this was the call that folks were expecting them to go on the offense, and they totally went, they totally did run and gut offense here. Basically, you know, pulling out all stops and just displaying a tremendous amount of confidence. And, you know, we're going to pull forward, which we'll get into, you know, commercial service, production, any number of things. We're going to go lock up the European market. I mean, there's just so many different things to pull apart here.
Which by the way, on that, you know, just taking a step back, the Legato deal itself is a coup in terms of the complexity and the strategic sort of kill shot that is. And if that's all Scott had ever accomplished in his life, he would have a successful life. And then this Vodafone thing that they pulled out of thin air is, I don't know if I fully appreciate him and all the nuances, but my takeaways are, when you have, you know, this balkanized continent, to be able to get this uniform gateway coverage right away, and then obviously our technology can handle the tight boundaries with the, you know, the inter-country clearances on the frequency.
Yep.
This seems like something that is absolutely not fully appreciated at having just effectively established a monopoly on another continent. We already had one monopoly.
Yeah.
If you define a monopoly by 66% market share, which I do, then this Vodafone thing seems to be another sort of Legato building block, where I think Legato can again be worth $50+ per share. This European JV seems like the same type of thing, if not bigger.
Yeah.
And how are these guys having the time to pull all this stuff off?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, that's how you get leverage through working with MNOs, right? Cause you're going to be leaning heavily on Vodafone, and hey, they wouldn't have been able to accomplish all these regulatory coups without guys who, you know, AT&T, Verizon, Vodafone, whoever it is, like, who understand that whole framework and how to get things done. If you were a startup, you know, going in front of the FCC saying that you're going to build a broadband service over satellites, they would have laughed you out the
I literally, it is telling that my involuntary reaction is literally to laugh, which I think tells us the answer. Yeah. And I just look at other seminal businesses that are really impenetrable, and it's Visa and MasterCard. We're not possible without the banks kind of helping them along, well, more than helping along the line, like literally putting them into business. And ASML, same thing. And then frankly, NVIDIA, you know, if Microsoft and Intel hadn't really kind of written them in to the motherboard, no way. And so, yeah, your point is to be able to leverage those behemoths and be sort of their off balance sheet R&D center, while they clear the way on these somewhat sort of insurmountable hurdles to do by yourself. It doesn't seem to be something this call really proved that these analysts are still very early in their research. I mean, the fact, like you pointed out, the fact that the guy asked if the ASIC was in the phone, you're like, is this not a Zoolander? Like, the file is in the computer.
Yeah.
No, not like in the computer. I feel bad. I mean, this is a lot of pretty hard content to learn, but it does show that we're light years ahead in terms of seeing where the puck is on this stuff.
Yeah, I think his question though was misunderstood. But it was funny nonetheless. But why don't we kind of go into each one of these topics? So first we'll cover is financial/funding. And so I think there were some interesting takeaways there. Obviously, some of these things we all know already. I mean, they've raised close to $1 billion of cash with a combination of the convert and ATM. I would also note that I think because of some of the milestones that have passed, the AT&T payment of 25 mil, I think it's 25 or is it 20? That goes hard. And then of course, Verizon, their 20 million of the non-condition 20 million or 25 million, that went hard as well. But what was interesting is that, you know, they did talk about the ATM. They have like 66 million left. However, the messaging today was that they feel pretty good of in terms of funding where they are for the next 12 months. They did mm-hmm. refer to the ATM would be used, I think it was judiciously or something like that. But the ongoing focus would be really a shift to prioritizing non-dilutive sources. And so one of the new things that we learned today was the fact that they are going to be bringing in what seems to be significant cash from gateway sales / bookings, which then Scott said, you know, that those
right away.
Those sales are, you're going to see these gateways popping up in various geographies. And that's going to be, then by seeing those, you're going to see where exactly the commercial service is going to go, which is great. The other kind of things that they didn't necessarily cover directly, I mean, some of these they did and some they didn't, but I think FirstNet funding is probably going to be something that comes into play in the next probably 3 to 6 months. They probably feel pretty good about that. Government funding, so defense, SDA, like that. Obviously, we saw 43 million, but Scott pretty much told us
it's going higher.
And then you've got the first time that they actually put a number around the quasi-government funding. So they put in the presentation, they refer to 500 million, which is really big. I mean, the Deutsche Bank analyst was like, are you sure you need all that money? Like, what are you going to do with it?
I know. Well, I was dying when he said that, because I'm like, yo, bruh, I'm like, this is capital intensive business. Yeah. And I know Andy was, Andy, I think under the call was being like, yo, shut up, dude. Like, yes, we want all the money we can get because we're going to create. I mean, we know what they're going to create. They're going to create something that is far surpassing our wildest dreams 4 years ago in terms of scope and scale.
Yeah.
And we want them to have all the money in the world because the ROI on that's going to be sick. But yeah, that the analysts are still haven't, I don't think they haven't readjusted their mindset. I still think they're at the NVIDIA graphics card.
Yeah. Stage. I think that's right. I mean, I guess for everybody's edification here, the issue for research analysts is that they're typically covering, you know, 20, 30, 40 stocks, maybe even more names, right? And bankers are introducing them to the next company that they need to cover if it goes public, or they're being, you know, they're hearing from the head of research, like, why aren't we covering this other company? You need to pick up coverage. And so we may make fun of them, but they have a really tough job. And so they're not going to know the details or really think through, for example, the strategic implications of the Vodafone JV, which, so I think it's important to cut these guys a little slack, and which is why, you know, it's great that they're able to leverage the Space Moth due diligence. Cause you know, as you mentioned,
It's awesome for them to plagiarize us. Yeah. Well, you know, what's kind of funny.
Yeah, I hope they do.
Like a side observation on that is I'm reading this book, The NVIDIA Way, right now, which is great. Everyone should read it if they have the time, but it goes to just the importance of like singular focus, which is something that I've always found very valuable in AST Space Mobile. They're doing one thing. They are doing backwards compatible satellite RF miracles. And then the application of that can expand. But the core competency of the first principle of the company is one thing. And then you look at companies like SpaceX, they've spread themselves thin and look what happens. And by the same token, I've actually adapted this mentality of, why put the pressure on myself to come up with like 500 trades all the time? You know, I get that Twitter can be this like mind poison that make you feel like you have to share all these new ideas. And I'm like, no, I'm going to have one idea, actually two. And what's great when you only have one idea is I'm as focused as a bell. And then you can actually really know what you own. And then, you know, on a day like today, like earlier this week, stock getting blasted. How many of us wanted to just throw up and think we're missing something? And then last night we read that press release and we went, game on. And it took a long time for the market to figure that out today.
Yeah.
It's crazy what a delay everything is on.
Yeah, I think as we talked about before, it's like there were some hedge fund shorts trying to walk the price down, and then they got their faces ripped off right at the open. And then, you know, the stock went from 24 to like 27. It kind of hung in there, and then of course the buying continued and it moved up from there with the market. But I think
That's when you called me for a wellness check, because you were like, yo, Kook, why are you so quiet? I'm like, I'm in a meeting. You thought I must be dead. Well, so on the financing part, I thought this ATM thing was a very peculiar fact. And I'm always a little bit cynical of assuming that Scott has some master plan to really just ruin the shorts. And he does, to be clear. And so this, I believe, might have been intentional as a real cookie crumb. Because to leave the 66, I assume they would have just finished it, cleaned it up, and refile a new ATM. And to be clear, that's what I think that they should generally do. By leaving the 66 open, it is such an F you to the shorts, because there's no clearer signal than saying, nah, we're good, than leaving that little stub ATM, like a little middle finger up in the air. And then the way they talked on the call, Andy was like, yeah, we're like pretty good for the next year. Right? I mean, we'll be opportunistic, but yeah, we're chill. We're chill, guys. And so if you're short, what you thought, and this would still be a dumb short to be clear, but what they would be thinking is, the ATM would be used up, which I frankly would have agreed with them. And then they would be expecting, you know, a vibrant earnings call, which they would probably say is all just bluster anyway, fine. But then they'd be expecting an ATM to drop, you know, Thursday or Friday or something like that. And for retail to panic, which again, they should not. That's what shorts would have been playing for, is yet another sort of fuddy financing thesis thing, which again is getting really long in the tooth, because it's very obvious that that's no longer really the relevant question for this company.
There's not really any more legs to stand on.
No, it's dead. and that's, well, it's like that meme someone made of, you know, the parrot or the pigeon or whatever, that Tim Farrar would like content, and the audience boos them and they're like, yo, more content. And that's like all they had.
Yeah.
And so then when there's talking about the cash flow positivity, that's crazy, because institutions will really understand. They'll do the same math I do. They'll look at operating cash flow, and then they're going to have CapEx as an entirely separate bucket. But as long as you're not funding operating losses, that's a real game changer for me. When I look at any company, public or private, first thing I'm doing is trying to get to a clean operating cash flow number. And then I'll start to figure out like working capital adjustments and things like that. And then you're looking at what I would call discretionary CapEx. This is not really discretionary, because you have to launch the constellation. And they did such a nice job articulating that. And that 500 XM is now like, they basically put landmines in the field for shorts. Like, good luck. Cross this dirt if you so wish, but know that it's mined, because now you know in the next couple months, they're going to be dropping some insane press release that will nuke the short thesis for all in the end of time.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think they basically, it sounds like there's three facilities that are being pursued for quasi-government funding.
Yeah.
And they have like different structure there. So I thought that was pretty interesting. To your point,
look at European money too now. Like, that's the other thing. Yeah. It was Iris too. Look at Europe's BATNA. It's signed some study contract with Viasat. Okay. Good luck. And then the bids are coming in like $11 billion. They don't have operating tanks. They're not spending $11 billion on this stuff. They're going to give like a $2 billion services contract to Satco. And that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of the is that European governments can, with a straight face, this is European controlled and led, and so we can put money into it. And so it makes that path very easy. And then, you know, with that JV, there's various alternatives. Like, you could have MNOs invest into that entity, or that entity could go pursue, you know, because we have this new facility in Barcelona, it could go pursue grants and subsidies and whatever else you want.
You know, right? It's so powerful. A point I had made on some spaces previously is trying to educate people on what's called a multi-client model. And multi-client models tend to be natural monopolies, because once in place, they're really impossible to compete with, because unless someone just subsidizes competition. But here, this Vodafone announcement is really the birth of a multi-client model that is much, much deeper than I would have ever anticipated. Yeah. And they're going to be, you know, in theory, they should be able to get the full economics on a proprietary constellation that Europe was otherwise going to pay. So say that was going to be, I'm making up a number, $5 billion. They only need to sell whatever it is, the landmass of Europe, 15%, 20% of that flyover. And they should be able to get, in theory, the indifference point is that $5 billion, but then they can earn that $5 billion another two or three times around the globe.
Yeah.
It's unfair. And that's what creates a natural monopoly, which I do believe the market will come to understand.
Yeah, and I think today's news, where they are announcing the creation through I would assume this JV, the creation of Europe's first net, first responder network.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, that's huge because like you've got this patchwork of local regulators and different requirements, whereas Vodafone's going on saying we're going to just roll this thing out across Europe. And so I agree with you. I just don't know how you, especially if you're not European led, I don't know how you compete. If another European led entity, which, Iris, for example,
tries to do this, nothing.
Good luck. That's like 10 years of development, billions down the drain, right?
They'll never do it. That's like fake. That's a white paper elephant for Europe, just to pretend like they're in the game. And then they probably already know they're defeated. And so then they're going to be looking for a solution like this. This goes back to the local content concepts I've been talking about for the past couple of weeks. By having this governance set up as European, that's the necessary component for these guys to just step on the gas. And then contractually, this entity will effectively own ASTS Space Mobile's flyover capacity. They'll just transfer those rights.
Yeah.
Like we don't own Legato, or the deal's not closed, but we have effectively a lease. Think about the Mandarin Oriental in Hong Kong, like a 99-year lease.
Yeah.
That's what's going on there. And boy, just how this company has evolved. It's really, to quote Andy, I guess he's like, we're becoming an operating company.
Yeah.
Well, they're becoming much more than that. They're becoming this multinational strategic juggernaut. And the strategy that I'm seeing here far surpasses any expectation I could have ever had. I don't know that I ever really thought about it, to be honest. It's one of those things where when it hits you, you look back at your research, you're like, wow, I had never really thought that part through. I was really stuck on the like, will it work question. But now this,
well, we were, real yeah, politic, we were, I, if you look at where they are now and the moves that they've just over the last, what, 2-3 months, the moves that they've made versus where we thought the company was in 2023.
Yeah.
Like, or can they actually put one foot in front of the other?
I would have never guessed.
But it was all there. Like, for example, the ASIC development back then actually included this spectrum from Legato. All these moves were there, but we couldn't get past the fact that the stock was in the shitter, and obviously the macro environment was bad, and any number of things that made investors gnash their teeth, right? But I think closing out on the funding side, the fact that we had the company explicitly a number of times say that, number one, so we are going to have an initial commercial service in 2025 across US, Europe, Japan, the government, US government. And then they said a few other select markets, which is kind of neat because Scott specifically said today, we are going to round out our MNO partners.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like that stuff is coming to fruition soon.
Yeah.
But I think we were all under this, idea that you weren't going to have commercial service until it was continuous, like all in, at least 45, 50, 60 satellites. But now we're learning that, we have the ability to get to cash flow break even because the non-continuous service, whether that's IoT, or we learned today that the government apparently is very interested in non-communications applications, which I think is code word for, we're not going to tell you, it could be communications, but we're going to say.
We're going to keep Russia and China guessing on what that means.
Yeah. But the fact that operating 25 satellites gets company to cash flow positive on operating expenses, I mean, that's a huge change in the narrative, which I think the market at some point they'll realize or they'll get. But if you're short,
you got to get out of the way. If you're short, you got to get out of the way.
You're going to get steamrolled.
You're going to get killed because the second you're operating cash flow positive, life is all about degrees of freedom. If you have them, it's good. If you don't have them, you're cornered. The world's not a very nice place if you don't have degrees of freedom. When you have operating positive cash flow, guess what? Access to capital explodes on you. So it's the ironic thing is when you don't need capital, it's all available to you. And then in here, when it's all available for you, then your opportunity to invest aggressively in really high ROI growth, I still think they're going to have a second shell. So you know, think about the world where all of a sudden, though, let me back up for a second. There's no way you're building out this vertically integrated capacity that can build 72 satellites a year to then end at 100 satellites. No way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're going to be Legato, doing multiple Legato's shells. Legato is going to require a mid-band shell. So they're building that too. Yeah.
They're going to be building hundreds of these things. And the economics on them are going to be insane. It's we're going to be a much, much bigger company. I still think this is NVIDIA. NVIDIA, people thought it was just like a simple graphics card. Now it's the most valuable company in the world.
Yeah, that is pretty mind-blowing. But yeah, so shifting the I guess to the next theme, which is accelerating execution. You know, today we learned we went from 17, you know, they ordered materials for 17 Block 2 Bluebirds to now they've basically got 40, close to the point where they can assemble these things. And so I think for people's edification, like, you know, these satellites, you don't put them together until you really are about to go launch them. And so you pretty much build each of the components, whether that's the microns or the bus, the control set that is. And so what you've got currently is that, you know, the company's going to be launching the first Block 2 satellite with ISRO sometime at either the end of April or early May, probably early May. But they're going to want to see the satellite go up and then unfold. They know the software works. They know all that, you know, the array works, but they also need to make sure that when this thing unfolds that they haven't missed anything, right? So they're going to wait to assemble the others to see first, you know, they've done everything with the exception of the final assembly, but they want to see that first made in flight go up and be successful before they, you know, they basically put the rest of these together. But they've got 40, you know, being assembled, and then they've got materials, the long lead time items for up to 53. From what I understand.
And yeah, 53 is what I heard. Yeah.
So this is a huge deal because I think we all had a bit of concern when they were building the first Block 1 Bluebirds. And keep in mind, like those are a third of the size of these Block 2. These Block 2 are three times bigger. And so so now they spent a significant amount of CapEx this past quarter. I think it was like over $77 million. In the fourth quarter. And so
this quarter is 170 for Q1.
So they're like firing on all cylinders here in terms of building. And so that was a huge, I think, you know, when we all read the press release last night and then the 10K disclosures, I'm sure shorts were in denial, right? But for the rest of us, we're like, holy shit.
I like I was telling you earlier, you know, when the stock is down, then all of a sudden you go to a dark place because this is the ASTAS way. And so the only thing I could see is they were like, oh, we got them. Look, the accelerated production, these Looney Tunes, now they have to raise more money. I think people just get such a weird sort of mental illness with this stock based on the shorts I read that almost they just can't see the light. And so that's the only thing I could have figured out is people were like, oh, now they're going to self-bankrupt. The idiots. It's like, no, that's not what Scott's doing. He's not self-bankrupting. He's doing the opposite. He's self-riching, and he's going to build more faster to then have a natural monopoly to bring cash flow sooner and expand his degrees of freedom through copious avenues of financing. That's what he's going to do. It's somewhat shocking to me sometimes these guys don't put one and one together, but this has always been about shakedown. And so when I say shakedown, it's a hugely complicated issue creating a vertically integrated aerospace company, like not easy to do. Mm-hmm. And you have to shake it down. I learned a lot of this from Steve Larrison because he had a lot of, I'm sure you remember, you know, worked in the aerospace industry. And so he was the one really warning us the whole time about how complex it would be to get to production scale. And he was right, unfortunately for us, but we're here. And now that you have that, I mean, you know, as I do, that, the satellites are a lot bigger, but the control set is the control set. That's a complicated piece of kit. But then the microns, they've built out this micron production capability. So, the satellites are bigger. That just means more microns. And the microns they have down to seemingly a well-honed production line.
Yeah.
And that's what they're really kind of stamping out, you know, these little waffles, basically. And this... I just can't, when I kind of visualize, it's really funny for me at this point just to think of of shorts losing their minds. When you think about later this year, in every 45 days, there's a new Glenn going up with 8 of our satellites. What a nightmare if you're short this stock, because nothing says I love you like a rocket launch. And this company's going to be saying I love you
every 45 days. Yeah.
It's going to be so awesome. I hope Scott will let us go, because I'm really actually willing to almost sidestep my career at this point to just be a launch junkie and just like go to all of them.
You're going to be like, Grateful Dead or Fish.
Yeah. I'm a big Trey Anastasio fan. I actually really do like Jerry Garcia as well. But yeah, this is like my comeback for all those years where I was working and like being a loser by studying. This is going to be like Kook's revenge, is be a ASTS groupie. But they should do that. If anyone from ASTS is watching, I will actually try to go to all of them if I don't have like a kid conflict. But anyway, going to this every 45 day launch, like this is where I was always thinking, my original position design, I think a lot of you people know that I have a big common equity position is gathered, but I also have a pretty big option position, which is not how I would generally do it. It's just kind of how I had to do it for some other reasons. And I really thought that this is a stock where once people arrive, the fact that it has any value, I always would say if it's clearly worth $20, not the stock price, but like if it's actually worth intrinsically $20, then it's worth $200. This is one of these things where there's not a normal distribution. It's really a stepwise function where, you know, if you answer the if statements, if anyone goes to that pinned tweet I have a chart that talks about this, like if statements that flip to unless statements, we've now really unlocked almost all of the remaining if statements to unless statements. And the power of unless is the car is going to keep going down the road unless there's a mysterious brick wall in front of you, which there will not be if you're on a freeway. And previously, this stock was like held back by 500 reasons. It's like, it's not going to go up because if all these things have to happen. Now it's like, it's never a riskless investment by any means. But right now, with these 40 satellites being built, as they say, it's a race against themselves. If they can execute on this final leg and get those in the sky, they've won.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I think, you know, if you're an analyst that's covering the stock for a hedge fund and you're short, like the portfolio manager, after looking at the disclosure last night and then today, is like, excuse me, so why are we short this thing again?
Like, yeah, what's Starlink?
All the different things that you told me were not going to happen, or, you know, it's going to cost $2-3 billion to get the constellation up. They're not going to be able to generate money to pay for it. You know, they're not going to get through regulatory, any number of things, right? Like Starlink's going to crush them because they'll develop technology that's going to be as good. There's no leg to stand on anymore. And so as you talk about, like, how can you be short something that has just immeasurable white space?
No. Yeah. I mean, a person smarter than I am, you just always kind of define things as, you know, you want to find stocks that are real, first of all, but where you can dream a dream. And so take, for example, my other investment with VF Corp, which is just getting trashed right now because of tariffs, but I think that will subside. But it's hard to kind of dream a dream around VF Corp and Vans. Like, I have pretty reasonable expectation of why I think it's 40 or 50, but it's not worth 500. That would be kind of a stupid dream.
Yeah.
ASTS, like, your imagination can run wild, and not crazily though, because this is one of the biggest markets in the world. And if cloud computing, if AI, if all of these things are to be as big as people hope them to be, it requires the global infrastructure on the back end. And so frankly, my only advice to shorts is realize that tomorrow, with the stock kind of gapping up as it is, you've got one little hope, is that the convertible bond guys are going to adjust their hedges just like one last time before they're again on a full delta. And so they're going to have like a little bit of stock hedging to do. And once that's done, and it will be done quickly, they're dead. Because that means then there's literally no new supply of stock available.
Yeah, 100%.
And we saw what happened last time, is once those hedges are done, and all of a sudden people are like, whoa, hold on, why did it go from like up 3% intraday to like up 20%? It's because all of a sudden you just the supply ran out. And I don't know if people quite understand just the mechanics of sort of how that works, but those hedges, we're going to be having those converts back on a 90 delta really, really fast. And then and then there's nothing left.
Yeah.
No more stock being sold. Yeah. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah. No, that's right. I mean, I think we saw some of that dynamic today where
that's what happened, I think, long after onlys, 17.
Long onlys in retail were buying, and so we were, oh, we're not red, we're actually green. And then when the hedging was done, all of a sudden the stock took another leg up.
Zoom.
But going back to the accelerating execution, so we learned some pretty interesting stuff today, which quite frankly was a shock to me. Like, for example, the manufacturing expansion, the fact that, okay, so so SpaceMob, through our copious amounts of due diligence, we were able to uncover that, you know, we got another 59,000 square feet of manufacturing space in Spain. Mm-hmm. So great. But then what we didn't catch is that they signed up for 85,000 square feet more in Homestead, Florida, which, from what I understand, is going to get like nice tax breaks or whatever. But I mean, as we made the point before, like, you don't sign up launches. You also don't sign up space for manufacturing unless the shit works. People want to buy it and pay for it. And you're highly confident in that what you're doing now is going to get you to whatever it is. You're going to build the 40 bluebirds, but then you need that extra space because you're going to build another shell or, you know, whatever it is, right?
Well, there's an important corporate governance element to this as well.
Yeah.
So sometimes companies do stupid things because a lot of companies have boards that are not very invested. It's a bunch of sinecures where people are on a board and it's really like a status symbol, but they're not really they're not owner operators, and they're sort of like showing up. And that's how you can have like really dumb deals, and how you can also have really bad CEOs installed because board members aren't really thinking like predators who are fully absorbed. This company is Abel's personal company. You know, we just happened to be along for the ride with a guy who appears to deeply, deeply care about our interests, which is shocking of just what a fiduciary he is. But he has super voting control. It is his board. It is his company, his money. And he's going to be very careful about risk and expansion. And so that's where I take a lot of stock, that having seen these guys really play their cards tight, because they were very strapped on cash previously, to now see them open up, knowing just how scrappy they are, tells you how overwhelmingly positive the signals are that they're delivering into. And all I could really think of is that quote from AT&T where they said, you know, once we get full confidence in the system, we're quote unquote, I think, like, we're going to just tell them to launch the constellation as if it's AT&T's decision.
Yeah.
But it sure does look like ASTS was told go. That's what this says to me, is the MNO said go. And you want to tell me Verizon isn't the lead cheerleader now after Starlink just stripped them of their FAA contract? These MNOs are now out for blood, I think. And they're seeing this upswell of true organic consumer interest in this, unlike, frankly, I think anything they've ever probably seen before. And they finally have product market fit on something that's exciting.
Yeah.
And so I think they said go. And that's also why Andy's so chill on the money, because this is the company now that I think is going to have all the money in the world thrown at it. It's really just their choice. And Scott's a judicious guy. I think he's going to have like a nice diversified capital base. Mm-hmm. And just like they have a very nice diversified launch base, they're really being smart about not being dependent on others.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think for the MNOs, like, this is truly, I mean, if you read like industry reports, like the whole industry has stagnated somewhat. And that's why, for example, T-Mobile blew their brains out and went with Starlink, because they were like, oh, this is something sexy and cool, and we can look like the Un-carrier again and get more subscribers and reduce our churn. But I do think, as Abel alluded to back in 2020, like, this is going to be an iPhone, a new iPhone moment for that. That was for AT&T, but it will be for AT&T Verizon now in the US. When the iPhone first came out, I mean, it was a huge industry game changer. And so I think now they know they've got this tremendous, this tremendous solution and product that they can sell to consumers that's going to change the game. And so it's a very exciting time for them. But, you know, relates to manufacturing, the fact that, again, this is just more stuff that I don't think any of us would imagine would have been spoken formally on a call. But, you know, they pretty much said that by the second half of 2025, they will be at a production ramp of 6 satellites per month, which is pretty nuts.
It is pretty nuts. And I'm just thinking, for all my previous and prior interactions with Scott, where he was just like the cagiest MFer I've ever met, for him to actually say these things with zero ambiguity is not normal for him. He must be very uncomfortable. I wonder if someone like drugged him with like an honesty pill, because normally he'd be like keeping all possible degrees of freedom to like not give guidance.
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't want to have lawsuits and stuff like that. He would do anything possible to not give guidance, because I think truthfully a year ago, he didn't know.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember the reason I don't talk to him anymore is because every time he would try to talk me out of my position. He'd be like, "Kook, this is super risky. It could go to zero. You don't know. This is so hard. Be careful." All he would do is try to get me to diversify and need S&P 500. And that's why I don't talk to him anymore, because why would I do that?
I think you're embellishing a bit there, but yeah.
Look at me now. But now I think he's seen these cards flip.
Yeah, that's...
You know, he used to almost, like, read me the 10K disclosure. That's why... He'd almost be like, well, Kook, so on the risk section.
But that's why I think it's so powerful, because, like, we know management and how conservative they are in dealing with public investors. And this is the first time where they have completely flipped their tone and their approach, where they're like, uber confident, which means...
Well, not even, like, behind closed doors. Like, when's the last time... I mean, the reason I don't call management anymore is because they just like wouldn't ever give me any good details. Credit to them, Reg FD. But I think if anything, the MO would have been to give guidance just to the analysts and sort of leak it out that way. And to be giving explicit guidance now on the open conference call, to me, tells me it's done.
Yeah.
Like that to me just means done. Knowing this company.
Yeah. I agree.
And then I think the sell side analysts know that too. And now they're free. This is what we kind of talked about last week on the spaces with your cool baseball thing about the sell side analysts. This is now the dog whistle for all those guys to be, and I guess you already saw that with the Deutsche Bank analysts. Now these guys can really tighten up and pull forward numbers. And I'm still waiting on Bank of America, because I think that's the big bang. And I think we're going to get that. We're going to get that at some point, obviously. But I think now, why would you not put out research now that the company has revenue? Is guiding toward like pretty meaningful revenue from already announced contracts right into the summer, where people are going to be staring at these pictures that are going to have, like, you know, 30 bluebirds stacked in the gold. I mean, that's going to be a really wild picture. It's going to be like, oh, did they like zoom out? Did they have like a bunch of pictures of bullets or something? It's like, nope, those are actually 2-ton satellites, not like little, you know, copper bullets,
not little plates.
it's gonna be really jarring to see that many cargos lined up. And again, I just go to who's having their dinner bought for them in Spain. This company, every launch provider, you can't tell me SpaceX isn't like picking up the bill at Nobu for these guys.
That's a point I made earlier, which is I don't think people comprehend, you know, in the space industry, but especially investors, like AST Space Mobile right now is the largest, and most attractive launch customer outside of Starlink, which Starlink doesn't really count because it's captive. This is a real company with money and satellites, and they need to launch them into space. And there aren't many of them, whether it's like vaporware, like Rivada, which went bankrupt. I think they had like 12 slots with SpaceX, which were all fake, or any number of other companies. I mean, most companies out there are sending up CubeSats or maybe a few satellites here and there, a small constellation. But I mean, this is the only real company outside of any captive, you know, satellite / launch guy, and so that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is, and you know, I it's just incredible to see how the cards flip. I mean, 4 years ago, this was such like a little stain on the carpet type of company. And now it is pretty crazy to think that this is sort of dictating you know, Bezos's launch plans. You know, I mean, he kind of like needed this to underwrite New Glenn.
Well, yeah, because Kuiper's not ready. It's not going to be ready for some time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. And what's just so exciting to see is how they just open up these use cases. And I really do think this is sort of the iPad moment where I wonder if Abel even knew the use cases. I think Abel did not, but I do think there's another incredible parallel between him and Jensen Huang is that he knew how to set up the technology to be flexible to address the use cases that others could concoct when you put the technology out there. And so when you think about NVIDIA again, which I still think is the right analogy, is when you had CUDA, the key was to then give it to all the universities and give it to all the researchers to then have them say like, well, can you program this? Can you program that? And that's where you created like the crazy adoption and the use cases. It just seems like that's what's happening here because they're this research center with Vodafone, getting people to go out and play with it, or really experiment with it. NATO doesn't play with stuff. And so when you have these R&D functions and all these primes they're working with, think about the ideation that's happening here as Fairfield is experimenting and realizing use cases of the warfighter and then L3 Harris, which we believe is their other partner, and then all the M&Os. Think about the ideation that's occurring that Abel and Scott probably had no idea about. But what they did know is that to capture all that, you need to have a backwards compatible system that has the lowest friction. And then with that, you can move like water to where the opportunity is. And that's what I believe we're seeing in front of our eyes, where you and I couldn't possibly have speculated or still cannot speculate today about how this will take form in the future. But we know that we will be part of that future because the first principles this company was built on are there.
Yeah. And I think that's an important point where you've got a lot of smart people working at the company. They came up with a solution that has the least amount of friction, but they're, and you and I could not have dreamed nor probably, I'll give them more credit.
We could dream. We're pretty crazy. We're dreamers, but yeah, we didn't really know.
I mean, like moving on to the topic of strategic theme, you know, like this, I do remember having doubts about Europe because of the fact that it's, you know, it's solving a puzzle, right? Because you got all these small countries, the very close borders, even the company's satellites, you know, they project accurate fixed beams, there's still potential issues to deal with, right? And so that was always like, you know, they'll figure it out maybe, but I didn't quite know how. And then all of a sudden they come up with a master stroke of like this Vodafone joint venture, which will basically unlock Europe and then lock it down because like no one else is going to be able to come in. This thing solves like the sovereignty issues, you know, originating and landing traffic in the continent. So, and look, they can even do more stuff to ring fence it, right? Like they can create a supervisory board and they can do all these things to make Europeans feel like this is a European company, right? And that solves,
you know, what's crazy.
Yeah.
I was just saying, what's crazy is the gut punch of how they're opening it up with this turkey solution.
Yeah.
So they're sucking, they are sucking the oxygen out of the room where Starlink isn't going to be able to even pick up the onesies and twosies, like the little salt guy they have in Switzerland. Yeah. And like Link might've had a saving grace to pick up like a couple little guys here and there. They basically just firebomb the market.
Yeah.
Where there's really no pocket left untouched. And to your point, I mean, wasn't it just like 2 or 3 months ago where the infamous consultant was out saying there are no rules in, it was like actually almost the equivalent of yesterday where the guy with conviction NSW. Was saying that Europe was NSW. Like
not gonna happen.
Yeah, like
the guy speaks in absolutes. And that's the thing, like it, because it's a European solution, it's going to completely ease the regulatory path, right? Because it's like if Vodafone, Orange, Telefonica, any number of carriers in a group, in a coalition, comes to the EU regulators and say, this is what we want, this is how we're going to do it. What are the regulators going to say? They're going to adopt it.
I'm sure they're going to roll over it. Yeah.
And so, and I think, so it was interesting today because Scott did put some numbers around it, which I don't think, again, people are going to say, yeah, you say that all the time, but I don't think the market comprehends it. So what, from what I understand, Vodafone basically serves 10 countries in Europe, and that's going to go to 30 yeah. through this JV, the ability to address 30 countries. And so what does that mean for subs, right? Vodafone UK in Europe is approximately 90 million subs. What Scott said today is this unlocks a total of 600 million subs. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just actually thinking out loud too. I'm wondering if this masterstroke created the equivalent of that continuous GIA yeah. rule, which we knew existed in the US. That was a big yeah. deal with the FCC. I'm wondering if actually, maybe this is a job for Katsi. I'm wondering if that same concept might have been lurking in Europe and we just might not have known it. And then this might have just obviated that whole point. I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Because then that, I'm wondering if they figured out a way to actually make this sort of supranational and cut across. That would make sense. Because then you'd also get rid of the border issue altogether.
Yeah, I mean.
I don't know. That was just pure speculation on my part. But that would be kind of interesting. And that would make yeah. sense.
If you could get the carriers to work together and they all agreed to harmonize spectrum in the areas.
No more border problem.
In the areas where the towers are not. Of course, it would be a similar model to the 850 megahertz spectrum here. But as Scott has said in the past, like, our technology is very unique. We can stitch together the same spectrum bands, but from different carriers and make it contiguous, which is pretty nuts. So I think yeah. you're right.
Yeah, I wonder that, you know, just goes to show you that we can spend all day kind of guessing and trying to armchair quarterback the management and strategy of this company, which is always kind of funny. And then as it turns out, we actually have consummate professionals with an unbelievable board at the helm that have been guiding this thing, seemingly being a couple steps ahead the whole time, except obviously when interest rates went up 500 basis points and the entire market imploded, that was the thing.
Yeah, of course, they sure saw that.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, that, and you look back, like, no one's perfect, but other than that little near-death experience, which traumatized all of us forever, it's been incredible how they've seen yeah. the technical issues.
Yeah, 100%.
So, and what's neat though is you think about it, you know, part of me is, though, again, just like kind of so exhausted over this journey that I always am like, well, what are the next events? Even though I tell people, like, think long term, I'm also a human being as well. And but then this call just led me to believe that the rest of this year is going to have this event velocity
mm-hmm. yep.
that is going to be somewhat astounding. Because you just think about what we just talked about now.
Yeah.
We just sort of impregnated Europe to be doing our bidding for us. And that's only going to pick up, you know, yeah. all these other MNOs as they join, they're going to be very vocal. There's the awareness is going to go through the roof. The launch cadence is going to be this wild, visible event that no one's going to want to be on the other side of, you know, maybe, you know, some people might play sort of launch letdown. But then if there's a next one in 45 days, you just have a launch ramp right again, and cash flow is building too. So the whole idea of like this pause after launches just goes by the wayside anyway. Yeah. And then before you know it, we don't have to worry about quote unquote events anymore anyway, because we'll actually just have operating cash flow, and then people will start to think about capital allocation.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like dividends, share repurchases, like true value creation. And frankly, I hope those things aren't near term anyway.
Yeah, because yeah. you want to be investing in the business.
You want to be investing. Yeah. I want to see them actually pick that. You know, they talk about the operating expenses going down because the R&D is tailing off. I'm kind of like waiting and hoping that that actually picks up again, because what next?
Well,
you know, I want them to be pushing and keep innovating.
Well, I think one of the things that's next that this European JV creates is the opportunity to go buy harmonized MSS spectrum in Europe, right? So if you can get mm-hmm. L-band or S-band spectrum, and similar to what we did here in the US, like Legato, then as Abel mentioned today, you know, you use the terrestrial low-band spectrum for coverage, but then for capacity, like true capacity, you want to have some exposure to mid-band spectrum. And so someone asked in the spaces comments, you know, what does Legato mean? And so for those that don't know, Legato is 1500 megahertz you know, MSS satellite spectrum, which is 20 by 20 megahertz in, you know, 20 megahertz bands downlink, 20 megahertz band uplink. But what Legato will do is
an extra five thrown in there.
And so what Legato will do is enable the company to get up to 120 megabits per second peak speeds. And this will augment what we already have, which is 850 megahertz low band spectrum, which is used for coverage. But what this does is and what's unique about AST Space Mobile is that we have this satellite technology, which you referred to in the past. It creates alchemy here, where this spectrum was kind of floating out there, and various financial people have tried to do something with it, but they tried to use it solely for terrestrial broadband internet, and they couldn't get over interference concerns. Whereas our big satellites actually elegantly solve that problem. And so we are a unique buyer for that spectrum and unique user of that spectrum. And so what's interesting is that instead of just covering dead spots, that spectrum blankets the entire US. It's fallow, like no one's using it. And so you can provide full broadband internet, whether it's in the city or out in the suburbs. And so the reason why that's really interesting is that, you know, AST can go to the MNOs and say, hey, look, we're going to provide you with this additional broadband service that augments your network today. You can go sell this, or we can also sell it ourselves and do things like IoT, broadband to the home or whatever. But it just creates more strategic importance for the company and provides another service to sell. What the interesting thing that came out today is that Lutnick of the Commerce Department said that they're going to restructure BEAD funding, which is the broadband access $45 billion fund that, you know, originally was going to be allocated to building out fiber to rural areas that don't have internet access. But now they're opening up to basically any satellite internet provider, which Starlink is probably going to be a big benefactor of that $45 billion. But I would say that... Yeah, it's the 5G fund on steroids. We were trying to go for the 5G fund, which we still are going to pursue, which is $9 billion in funding. But this one, this is actually helping fund the build out of alternatives as well. And so if they open up for satellite, you know, Starlink and Kuiper had a small piece of this. But if the Trump administration is going to open it up for everyone, because we have Legato spectrum, guess what? All of a sudden we get access to those funds too. And so that's a huge piece of news that came out today, which, as I'll say again, the market didn't fully comprehend.
Well, I didn't even know about it. So yeah, I was kind of out of pocket today.
Hey, Krug, you're still there?
Can you hear me?
Okay, you faded out there.
Sorry, irony of ironies. I just got home, but I can't actually come to my neighborhood because I'll lose service altogether. So.
Oh, okay.
Let me open my
one. Well, you can drop off and come back on if you want.
Well, I'm just wondering, what other topics did we have to hit?
We're almost done. So, I'll just close out this strategic part. So that's what Legato does. And interestingly, the European joint venture, my guess is the next thing that they'll pursue is not only working together with MNOs there, but and not only building out the next FirstNet for Europe. I guess that's a lot on their plate, but by putting a unified markets across various MNOs in Europe, they're going to look like a very attractive acquirer of MSS spectrum, which some spectrum is actually coming up for lease in Europe. And so I think that entity will have a very good chance of that. A few more things on strategic. Obviously, there was hidden in the 10K. This is why everyone should read filings. The Google services agreement was signed in October 2024. I think similar to how Apple works with Globalstar, you're not going to know much details about that, about this relationship until it is further developed. But I'm guessing Google is probably going to keep that on the DL, which is why they didn't press release that. And there's no other details around that, really. But that just shows that, you know, the company is working with various folks in the ecosystem. And I think that group of companies is going to continue to grow as obviously the service gets rolled out. So, and then I guess the last strategic thing on the SDA award, we did learn, interestingly, that again, you know, these are not traditional communications related, at least that's what the company's saying, but this is the fifth contract award from the US government and the third with SDA. So as Scott has, you know, referred to in the past, some of these awards can turn into hundreds of millions of dollars. And so those are things that, that, you know, we have to look forward to. So the last thing, Kook, I know, and it's actually getting pretty late here on the East Coast, is regulatory. I'll just say, what was interesting is that Abel referred to the FCC and AST having the same goals, and he expects more FCC rulings soon in support of the AST. And so what I think what Abel was referring to is that they are in the final stages of process for what is the commercial modification of their existing commercial license, which means that they are applying for complete US market access. And so that's something that's going to be filed in the coming weeks, from what the disclosure said in the 10K. And that's going to request additional authority for more satellites and frequencies to use with space mobile service. It also will include the incorporation of Verizon frequencies. And so if you think, if the company is saying that they are going to roll out initial commercial non-continuous service in, you know, later in 2025, that means that this application needs to get filed very soon and will be approved probably over the next few months. So that's just another, you know, catalyst to look forward to. I don't know if you wanted to add anything on that, Kook.
No, I think hopefully the market's moved on. Can you still
hear
me?
Yeah, we can hear
you. I only have one bar. Oh, okay. Yeah, I hope that the market sort of moved on from thinking of regulatory risk as a binary event, as something that just will get taken care of, which it was always my view, yeah, is that man-made constraints will not and should not stand in the way of natural progression. And I think that's proven to be true. Is man-made barriers are going to fall down out of true market fit and pull. Just like other analog like this in the past, Uber, where all the rules said that Uber was illegal. And, you know, the world changed. Around regulatory stuff that seems
right. I think you are breaking up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Better?
A little better.
Oh, sorry. Well, anyway, I mean, I hit some of those points on Sunday, but I'm really excited. I think they did a. We all really appreciate it. Yeah, can you hear me?
No, you just went out there for a little bit. But yeah, I mean, we're pretty much close to the end here. I mean, I think the other points I would make is that they are rolling out beta service in the US. So hopefully, fingers crossed, some of us will be chosen as beta testers, unbiased beta testers, of course. But I do think, and you know, we talked about this before, but the Vodafone JV will ease the regulatory path, I think, in Europe, which is a big positive. But, you know, I think in closing, all these things put together, and you and I talked about this, our excitement, you know, what does it mean and where do we go from here? What should we be looking forward to? I think you hit the nail on the head with a very visible example, which is like, you know, when you've got launch cadence of 45, every 45 days, eight satellites are going up. That's a very visible thing. And so when you have cash flows coming in and you've got the business firing all cylinders, I mean, starting tomorrow, I think the stock should start re-rating and start discounting all of these things, as opposed to all the uncertainty that we had before. We're now, you know, we're flipping positive cards and we're now on this trajectory of real business momentum and acceleration of execution.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But I don't know. Do you have anything else to say in closing?
No, I'm just so proud that the Space Mob exists. And this is such a cool group of people. And hell yeah. That's my last comment is hell yeah. So not done yet. I know the team is not sleeping, but it looks like their hard work is now giving us a visible light at the end of the tunnel. So.
Yeah, and as we foresaw, I mean, I didn't mention it, but I was hinting like, oh, you've got all these things that these positive developments over the last few weeks, like those analyst price targets are looking very long of the tooth and stale. We're going to get upgrades tomorrow. And sure enough, already overnight, Deutsche Bank went from $53 to 64. God bless them. And so I think we'll probably see a few more upgrades tomorrow is my guess. And so yeah, this is the beginning of the fun part, I think, where we've gone through the difficult the value of death is, I think CATSE, there's some chart that shows the value of death. But like we've come through that, and now we're gonna benefit, we're gonna enjoy the fruits of that, of was it wisdom through suffering. And so I think now, especially with the company's level of confidence, I mean, I can't be more bullish on where we stand today. So I'm excited.
Yeah, me too.
I'm
Me too. I mean,
excited
I've
to see.
always been
Yeah.
pretty bullish, but I'm more bullish than I used to be.
If that's even possible, right?
I know. I'm just thinking, like, if Steve Larrison were here, he'd be like
Yeah, I know.
punching me. Well, at least he's gonna have a front row seat. So let's all just remember that
Yep.
how we got here is some people who are deep, deep technical backgrounds who were able to educate you, me, and really interact with CATSE at a different level that we could observe. And that's what helped us
Yeah,
really
100%.
focus on our research, which we shared, and then that snowballed to bring in all these other people that have frankly surpassed a lot of my own contributions, and that keeps this team really on the cutting edge. And hopefully
100%.
we're all right. Hopefully everyone's makes a lot of money and improves their financial situation, which is my personal goal, is to help some people have like a little bit more financial security through some good investments. So hopefully people are on that path. That's what would make me happy if that's true. So
We did accomplish that first leg, and it was fun meeting Space Bob at the launch and hearing all the cool stories about the war stories, which I we will do a space at some point in the future where people can share their own journey and some of the wild stories I've heard. But yeah,
it's
it's
actually
like
like a real AA meeting. Like, we'll have like blood type A, blood type A. Everyone could talk about they're like how this thing almost killed them, but their path to sobriety started with due diligence or something.
Right,
Oh,
100%.
man.
All right,
Life
guys.
is a fun journey. All
Yeah,
right. Thanks
totally.
for doing this. Nice to chat with you as always,
Oh,
Yanping.
and I forgot to say, it was when I did post that Deutsche Bank upgraded to 64. King Tut responded and said, "I guess we're going to India." So,
Yes.
because we had
Oh,
that
man.
bet, I think if the stock were to go above 60 or 60, was it 65, that we'd have to go to the Indian launch. But that was if it goes above that before the Indian launch. So we'll see. But if it goes, and we both were kind of loath to go to India, but at the same time, if it's above 65, then we'll be more than happy to make the trip. So, but anyway, thanks everyone for joining. And yeah, we've got for those who know. Space Investor has his weekly space, which I'll be back on tomorrow night at 8 p.m. to talk about AST Space Mobile. Then, of course, Kook. I don't know how you're going to do this the weekly this time around because it's just going to be. I'll send you these notes that I put together, and you can maybe,
I'll just
yeah.
read your notes again. I'll find some off-topic, funny way to talk about the same thing twice as I usually do when I do my internal
Yeah,
monologue.
100%. Well. Thanks everyone for joining. We'll see how
Sounds
things go
good.
tomorrow. Take care. Good night.